Joining us on the WDIS Newsline is Walpole Town Administrator Michael Boynton.
Hello, Dan. Good afternoon.
Hi, how are you?
Couldn't have been better.
Now, for the sake of disclosure, I'd like to point out that Mr. Boynton is originally from the town of Franklin. And back when he was a teenager, and even I was still young, this is in the 1980s, he worked at this radio station. And I've known Mr. Boynton for, what, about 25 years?
Yeah, I believe it was 1985 that I started there. I was there for, well, you know, the summer breaks. It was a great spot for a kid working his way through college type thing.
It was an interesting time. We had a lot of fun at this radio station.
Absolutely.
Then. And in those days there were no satellite networks. Everything was local, and we knew some characters.
Well, it was start your morning at 4:45, make sure everything was all tuned up and ready to go, power up the station, and then, oh, by the way, you were the sports guy, and you were the news guy, and you were the weather guy, and occasionally you had to play the music at the same time. So it was an interesting time, but, incredible experience because what it the doors and the things that opened up later as a result of knowing, what local was all about back then.
One thing that stands out in my mind was the night that somebody forgot to turn the transmitter off, and the next morning, as I'm walking through the door, the phone is ringing, and it's WWVA in Wheeling, West Virginia, saying, if you ever do this again, I'm going to have the FCC on you so fast.
We had some of those where the thunderstorms would certainly play havoc with the transmitter in the back, especially when the towers were hit by lightning. Those were the interesting mornings at 5 o'clock when it was supposed to be daylight, but it was very dark outside because of the clouds, not knowing whether you should turn on or not.
You know, we still have that problem with the lightning. And for people who have never been in a radio station when the tower gets hit by lightning, boy, it's loud.
I believe the great Dapper O'Neill from the city of Boston experienced that firsthand at WJCC at the time.
Mm-hmm. On the show hosted by his good friend Dick Sennett.
Yes.
Now that we have done a lot of disclosure, probably more than we should have.
A little more reminiscing, sure.
Yeah. Let me ask you a question straight out. This has come up. Do you live in the town of Walpole?
No, I did. When I first started working here, at the time the charter had a requirement that the administrator has to live in the town of Walpole. There was no waiver ability. So I was here from 2002 through 2006. And I had a condo in Walpole that my wife and I lived in, but it was a multi-level thing. And there were a number of factors in it. Obviously, Dan, certainly my physical limitations and challenges. But we have ended up with an opportunity to construct a house. It's a custom one-level house right next door to her parents. We live in Bellingham now. And kind of around the same time, but not as a direct correlation. Well, I mean, I think a lot of it played together. There was a charter review committee going on in Walpole, and the discussion that was had at the time had a lot to do with, does the town administrator need to live in the town to be effective in town? And they said, well, we'd still prefer it. In the way the charter was rewritten by the committee, and then ultimately voted on by town meeting and approved by, I believe, the legislature even approved it, is that, the prep there for the administrator to live in town. But for circumstances, any circumstance really, the Board of Selectmen may grant a waiver to that, provided that the community of residence is no greater than 15 miles from Walpole's borders. So that's something that played into, I think my decision to relocate. And also, I think in the town, talking a lot about it, and the whole residency requirement thing is not unique to Walpole. It's something that has come up in many communities, and more there are folks taking a look at it, communities taking a look at it, and saying, "Is this something that's essential?" I mean, in Walpole's case, the superintendent wasn't required to live in town. The police chief and fire chief were required to live in communities contiguous, but not necessarily in town. And so the question went on. So. No, the very long answer to the very short question is no. But I don't think in one instance that's hindered any of the operations of the town either.
When I worked in Brockton, I know there was a big push to get everybody who worked for the city of Brockton in Brockton. They wanted every police officer, every firefighter, everybody. I never really understood why it's so important for someone who's an employee to work in the community, but that's just me. Some people really do think it's important.
Well, there's no question, and that's still, I mean, that was a debate at town meeting. It wasn't extensive, you know, it wasn't a huge debate, but there was some commentary about that, you know, about whether or not the individual would still have the true focus. Two things. First off, with respect to civil service positions in this state, that's the 15-mile limit for civil service spots, jobs, so you can't require civil service folks to live in the community. The second part is, regardless of any of that, is you're talking about people that are professionals. Folks that hold my jobs, other department heads, you know, high-level positions in the community, that if you don't have a commitment to your job, which in this case requires a commitment to the community, you're not going to be effective in it, and you're not going to last in it. So in the big picture, I'd say that it's a more of a function of, you know, colonial New England than it is a function of getting the best management.
Now, you have experience in other communities. Where have you been the manager in addition to Walpole?
Mendon and Sutton. And Sutton, for example, that was a 45-minute ride from Franklin. I lived in Franklin at the time. Certainly no issue there. You know, there have been things that have happened here since the move, and even before the move, but especially since, that require me to be back after hours. And it's about a 25-minute drive. Max after hours, and I get here. That's the requirement of the job. This job is 24/7. This isn't a 9-to-5 job. And I quickly, you know, I knew that coming into the profession.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of one of the intriguing things about it. That's one of the things that make it so passionate.
The phone call at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Whether it's 3 o'clock in the morning, a Saturday or a Sunday,
mm-hmm.
if I'm needed and somebody requests me, I'll be here. And oftentimes, if I hear something, you know, constantly monitoring police and fire, if something happens and I think it's important for me to be here, I will be here. And I have not hesitated from that one bit.
Well, I see one thing hasn't changed. You still love the scanner, don't you?
We have three of them in the house, so yes, it's always nice to stay on top of things.
When Mike worked here back in the 80s, he always had a very good scanner with him.
As a matter of fact, that's how I got the job at WJCC at the time. So,
I should admit this. Mike had a scanner. The station did not. Because we were on a very slim budget back in the 80s. Just for the record, how far is your home in Bellingham from Walpole?
Well, it's town line to town line. And the town line, I believe, is just over 11 miles.
Okay.
So it's certainly well within the 15.
Mm-hmm.
But if you do a 15-mile radius from the communities, we did it recently because one of our collective bargaining agreements has a 20-mile limit for employees. And it's quick, you know, it's amazing to find how far 20 miles is from your borders and what communities are within that range.
Do you know offhand? So some of them? I mean, it is quite a ways when you think about it from line to line.
Well, 20 miles puts you down into Middleborough and Lakeville and that type of thing. So
wow.
when you start talking border to border, it's funny how we think of miles as, you know, a very small number. So it's, you know, when you put down how far, you know, in a geographic as the crow flies type limit it is, we were kind of stunned when we looked at it and said, wow, that still can be a pretty significant radius.
Now, how long have you been the administrator in Walpole?
In December, it'll be wrapping up 8 years.
Okay. And when is your next contract up?
2012, I believe.
2012, okay. Do you believe in the Mayan calendar?
No, I believe in the day-to-day approach.
Okay.
With a vision towards the future.
There you go. Now, speaking of the future, there's a town meeting coming up in Walpole. When is that?
On Monday the 19th, so that's 3 weeks from tonight. The town meeting will convene, and they've got 28 articles, I believe, that they have to work on. the biggest biggest discussion, the biggest item for the town meeting is going to be zoning. It is a proposal to redo the town's table of uses. No small feat, a major undertaking, and certainly folks with opinions on both sides of the issue, and strong at that. We also have some housekeeping budgetary articles, a supplemental budget article for fiscal 2010. Again, you know, Walpole is extremely fortunate to have a great financial team and some great department heads, both town and school side. It's without question that we've gone into this fiscal year with position cuts and some layoffs, but we've also been able to hold the line, and we've done well with the way we projected our budget, that we're not going to have to come in October and make further reductions. A lot of what we'll do over the next probably 10 months will depend on what the state does in the next 3 or 4 months in terms of how they've set their budget projections. Any major variations in state aid one way or the other will bring us right back to the table again. But knocking on wood, as where we sit right now, we seem to be holding the line fairly well.
When they took that $800,000 away, that was, whatever they call it, the mitigation for having the prison.
Sure, it was $750 for prison mitigation, yes.
$750. Did they indicate that this was a one-time only thing, or this could happen again, or they just didn't know?
Well, it was one-time only in the extent that we were getting it at one time and they took it away, and we'll never have to worry about them taking it away again because they're not giving it to us either.
Uh-huh.
So in that context, we're permanently down $750,000 off the base.
Now, some people would say, well, I mean, what does it cost the town to have a prison on town land? But it does cost the town, because you have to provide services to the prison, don't you?
We do. We provide ambulance service. We have fire protection, which is more of fire prevention. We have not had recently many incidents up there that the fire department's had to deal with. But we also have an awful lot of wear and tear on the town streets. You have just the stigma of having a maximum security facility. Now, what has changed, though, is that that's no longer a maximum security facility. For the most part, it's not classified as that. As a matter of fact, we just had a meeting with the superintendent and his staff at MCI Cedar Junction 2 weeks ago. We met with the police chief, the fire chief, one of the members of the Board of Selectmen, and myself. We attended a meeting there, and we were pretty pleased to see some of the changes that they were doing. And it's also nice to see that the prison team, so to speak, is engaged in what's going on in the community, and they wanted to know what our issues are. And they took some copious notes, and we've already seen some positive things come out of that meeting. So it's true that we're down the funding, that the funding was not arbitrary. It was something there to help the community be able to provide the services for a major correctional facility in the town, and that's not there. We will still provide the services. We'll still go there with the ambulance. We'll still provide public safety response and whatever other services are required for this municipality to provide. But we'll do it $750,000 lighter than we were a year ago.
Off the top of your head, do you know how long that prison's been there?
Prison was built, I believe, in the early 50s.
Okay, so it's been there for quite a long time. I saw something interesting in the news the other day. I think it was in the city of Springfield. They were going to add some new vehicles for their park department, regular cars for officials. And this was just a regular, you know, it was the time was due to do this. And they decided to get hybrid cars as sort of a test thing to see if it would save the city money. And if they come back and find out that, yes, these things really do save us money, they would continue to add hybrids to their fleet as they need to add new cars. Is the town of Walpole doing things like that to try to save money?
We haven't bought any hybrids at this point. We have scaled back the number of take-home vehicles. It's even something I'm reassessing at this point with some of the department heads. But there are a handful of us, me included, that still have some take-home vehicles. When I got here, the vehicle of choice was a large 8-cylinder Crown Victoria for department heads, oftentimes passed down from the police department. So we scaled all of that back. So we immediately went back to the 6 and the 4-cylinder type vehicles.
Mm-hmm.
And the Ford Tauruses were the vehicle of choice after I started for a department. So we got away from the big 8-cylinders. We brought them back down to the 6s. You know, there are some that would love to see us all in smart cars, but some of it has to be practical. Again, those of us that have take-home vehicles, we're on for 24/7. It's not uncommon for me to stop at some place on the way in, and I carry traffic cones and that type of thing in my vehicle, so that if there's an issue or a problem, I can at least drop the cones and have Public Works deal with the situation later, or stand by until someone can get there. All of the vehicles are equipped with radios and communication equipment. So it's we look at what's practical, what's realistic. I think everyone that is here has a true eye towards energy conservation. And if we can do what we're doing more efficiently or cheaper or in a greener way, so to speak, then we'll do that. The question just came to me this morning is when we're going to look to replace the 2002-year Tauruses. And again, a lot of that's going to depend on what I have available for capital funding. And it's not a top priority at the moment, but something to take a look at. I know the police department in this town tried out a 6-cylinder vehicle as a marked cruiser. Didn't have a whole lot of success with it just because of the type of use on it. But all of the administrative vehicles over the last several years, Tauruses and Impala and most recently the Chief's Ford 500, have all been, or Ford Taurus, whatever they're calling it now, have all been downsized to the 6-cylinder version. So yeah, everybody's trying to do their thing and to be a little bit more fuel efficient.
Mm-hmm.
With the large vehicles, with the big DPW trucks, they haven't come out with something yet that's at least that's going to meet our needs in that regard.
Mm-hmm. I'm waiting to see the arrival of the hydrogen-powered snowplow.
You know, something is around the corner, and I wouldn't mind doing it. I don't want to be the first guy to try it either.
If
the bugs haven't been worked out, I don't want to get us into a situation where it's more costly. You know, the MBTA has the cleaner, fuel-efficient buses. I don't know what the final outcome was on that, but there have only been a handful of studies on whether or not those types of compressed natural gas engines could even be effective in a snowplow type thing.
Interesting. Now let's remind people: there's a town meeting coming up on the 19th of October.
That's correct.
Anyone who's a registered voter in
anyone that's a resident of the town can attend the town meeting.
Okay.
We do have 150 elected town meeting representatives.
Right.
And they will be there to act on the warrant. It's likely going to be more than one night, but again, it starts at 7:30 on Monday, October 19th at the auditorium at the Walpole High School.
How long has Walpole had representative town meeting?
That is an excellent question, certainly long before my time, and I could not give you a specific date as to when it started.
Mm-hmm.
It switched from representative to from open to representative.
Mm-hmm. A lot of towns still have open, and then they have problems getting quorums sometimes. So,
honestly, it depends on what the charter says. There are some communities that have open town meeting, and as long as the town clerk and the town moderator are there, they can have a town meeting.
That's interesting. I wasn't aware of that.
That was kind of what we used to deal with in Mendon and in Sutton. There was no specific quorum requirements.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
It would not be uncommon in Sutton at the end of a fiscal year to have a town meeting to do some budget cleanup. It was an open town meeting. We'd post it and go through the normal process to have the special town meeting. It would not be uncommon to have 25 people show up and be able to go through the business of making year-end budget adjustments. And we were talking small amounts, nothing of substance.
You know, it's the purest form of democracy in the world is here in New England with the open town meeting. But on the other hand, sometimes when you have so few people turn out, a very few number of people are making decisions for the whole community. So there's sort of a two-edged sword there.
I think, you know, when you look at Massachusetts, you've got 351 cities and towns. There are 351 different ways of doing things because no two communities are identical.
Mm-hmm.
There was a time where if you look at a community's charter, typically, if a community has a charter, typically the charters are structured for the most part the same, but little variations creep in depending on what the desire or the wishes of the community as a whole were at the time the charter was created. So you can look at one that might have a strong town manager's position. The community next door takes the exact same charter, develops it, and looks at it and says, we prefer that the Board of Selectmen retain all of executive authority and we'll have more of a coordinator's position. So those things do happen. And again, that's what New England is. That's what Massachusetts specifically is. And there's no change in that in sight.
Well, I want to thank you for taking the time to talk with us. You gave us more time than I expected today. Appreciate it.
That's what we're here for. If anybody in Walpole has any questions, they can certainly feel free to call the office. There's an awful lot happening in town, and we're glad to be part of it.
And what is the office number, Mike?
508-660-7289. And they can log on to our website, which is www.walpole-ma.gov, and they'll find contact information for folks and plenty of department information in there as well.
Well, again, thanks. We'll do it again soon.
All right, Dan. Have a great day.
You too. That was Michael Boynton, Walpole Town Administrator. You're tuned to 1170 AM WDIS.